everybody, and welcome back to the Season 3 Monster Chiller Horror Theater of the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu, at your service. Super happy to be here for the final episode of Season 3. Oh yeah, we are talking about Frankenhooker, which, you know, as they say, is a terrifying tale of sluts and bolts. How can you go wrong with that? Anyways, I am joined by my good friends. So I've got James Cotta in the house.
I'm thrilled to be here to talk about this classic of cinema.
Classic of cinema. Ah, yes. Nick. Nick Box.
Greetings and solicitations.
Solicitations. Oh, yes. You were working on that one, weren't you?
Yeah, that's my one.
Well done. Well done.
And finally, Jumpin' Jack Hall.
What's up, butterflies?
You weren't working on that.
Yeah. Man, Nick wins that battle hands down. All right. Well.
So, what are we talking about, boys?
Well, Nick, why don't you tell us about some hookers, specifically some Frankenhooker?
Well, Frankenhookers is a movie, and to summarize. Genius. Pure genius. Our protagonist.
That's the summary. Pure genius.
We will now pause for 80 minutes while you watch the film.
Yes. Our protagonist, Jeffrey Franken. Unfortunately, his fiance is killed in a freak lawnmower accident, which leaves nothing but her head and a foot. The foot doesn't really come into it, but I'm just mentioning it because for some reason he carries it around a lot. I don't know. But being somewhat of a mad scientist, well, technically he's an electrical engineer who occasionally dabbles in amateur medicine and surgery, decides he's going to resurrect his fiance. In a true Frankenstein manner, he comes upon the plan of stitching together his fiance using odds and ends from the dregs of society. He deems unworthy of life prostitutes. His method of choice to gather these parts seems to be super crack, which causes the prostitutes to explode. Along the way, I mean, he meets up with a pimp, loses his resurrected hooker fiance in New York City, and hilarity ensues. This is one hell of a movie, man. I love this thing. Then.
Oh, we've lost the plot already, which is relatively easy to do. No,
it's like an improv gone wrong. We're like, okay, I need a character from fiction, Frankenstein. Okay, I need an occupation, hooker.
Yeah, I need a weird death, lawnmower attack during cookout. Yeah. Oh yeah, I mean,
I didn't even mention his, you know. His recreational use of drill bits.
Well, that's the thing, right?
Self-trepanation.
When you first see the character, he is poking away at a brain with an eyeball in it on the kitchen table as they are setting up for the barbecue. Outside.
And none of that's even explained, is it?
No, like, nothing is explained. Well,
we see the brain with the eye later in the movie, but it doesn't play a part.
There's a 1962 movie called The Brain That Wouldn't Die, and it's based on that. It's a shout out to that B movie cinema schlock classic.
and I certainly appreciate
The Brain
that.
With the Eye looks wonderful, though.
Well, and I love the fact overall that the entire family is just like, oh, you know, he's slightly odd, but really, it's so typical of him. We just need to get him out so that he'll join us at the barbecue. Stop poking at the brain, please.
Oh, he's doing that at the kitchen table. Like he's...
Yeah. I need that so that I can prepare food. I'm not 100% sure I want to eat at their barbecue, but that's okay. Yeah, and then his fiance there being in the fat suit, and of course she dies in the lawnmower accident, the lawnmower that he created, of course.
You know, I thought putting her in the heavier outfit, like, you know, really hiding her body, was the most clever filmmaking choice of this whole movie.
Really, I actually thought that whole angle was sort of weight shaming.
Oh, well, I'm not saying it. Not saying
fuck
it.
Off. Because that
would be my problem with this movie, Frank and Hooker.
Yeah, that's
weight shaming.
The way that it doesn't respect the female form is. I mean, there's that scene, and then there's the one where 12 hookers explode. Yes. They're kind of about equal for.
It was an odd choice to have her crave pretzels, though. And it comes up a couple times. You'd think it'd be donuts or something, but you pretzels.
Watch it.
I don't think of. Yeah, I just don't think of pretzels as a particularly fat inducing snack.
Yeah, it shows.
Screw you.
I love it. That was uncalled. That was, you should be embarrassed for yourself. Jesus, Jack.
It's funny because so this movie feels to me like you have three different sections. You know, you've got the early period where he's discussing and he's trying to figure out what's going on. Then you have the middle period where he's got to acquire all of the pieces for it. And then, of course, you have the end where he's acquired all the pieces. And that's when all the some of the extra insanity happens right there at the end, as one would hope in a movie like this. So it's really broken down nicely, I guess, to that degree. Yeah, I love, there's that scene where they go through the credits, and he's completely drawing over top of a map of the female form, and he's like, yeah, I'll need this level of power for this, and this bit for this, and given how long that lasts, it's quite impressive that they managed to make it look as good as it does, I think.
Yeah, I think that James Lorenz, who plays the lead character, Jeffrey, I mean, it's pretty obvious to me that, like, a lot of this film is like an on-running monologue of just him, with nobody else around, just talking to himself. And I think a lot of this seemed to me like it was improvised. And especially that whole title sequence, that felt improvised to me. And he does a really good job with it. I mean, there's not a lot of support for him. I mean, you don't see Frank and Hooker himself until...
There's
56 movies.
There's 50. Hookers all over the place in this movie.
Dude, yeah, but that's it's 56, second part.
Yeah, it's 56 really, minutes before Frank does, and the hooker. Before Frank and Hooker doesn't show up till 56 minutes in, and the hookers themselves, that scene isn't like 30 minutes in. So it's like,
he has to carry an enormous amount of. Himself.
Oh yeah, he's the strength of this film. You know, outside of the nudity.
And let's not undersell that.
And if you like blue boobies, then this movie is for you.
That was a little gross.
Well, yeah.
Hey, no blue booby shaming.
No blue booby. I'm tired of shaming.
Purple nipples are nipples too.
Yeah.
They're pink, brown, or purple.
It's great because he's constantly talking to himself. And like when he's going out to get the hookers, he's just, you know, jibber jabbering as he's in the car.
Don't you guys agree it was probably, I'd love to see a commentary track on this. Don't you think that it was probably improvised?
I mean, to a certain degree, I would think, I mean, wow, that would be really scripting it to go down to the, to when he's searching for the hookers and he's driving around and he's just like, nope, that's not the right one. The legs. I don't know about the legs on that one. How about this?
So that's a question I had coming out of this, and it's not the only one, but it's one I want to bring up. So he has his late girlfriend's head, and he has the technology to attach that head to another body and bring her back. Why does he want to piecemeal it from a whole bunch of different women instead of just getting one body?
Well, because he wanted one body, but
they explode. They all exploded.
No. He wasn't. He was always planning to take pieces.
Because he wanted the perfect pieces.
He wanted the perfect girl, and he couldn't decide because.
Yeah, that's not how I interpreted it. That is possible. Because
the deal he made with the pimp was for one. But then they exploded, and he felt guilty, so he collected them all.
But even though the deal he made was overrun, I don't think he cared about that because he created the super crack to kill a whole bunch of them. And he even said, I'm not killing them. They're doing it to themselves.
No.
So that he would have the parts.
Yeah, I think
let's not forget the super crack. I think we kind of just glossed over that.
He just made too much super crack. He only needed a little bit, but you're creating super crack. You might as well make some extra.
Okay, let's go to the judges on this. I say he wanted to kill a whole bunch of them. I've taken and always build the perfect woman.
I actually agree with both of you because both of you are correct in your arguments because. When he was measuring out all of the different women, he was absolutely looking for different parts. And I believe that he wanted the perfect body and the perfect woman. But at the same time, you know, Nick, you are right. I think that he also just ideally wanted one to be the perfect woman. And yes, I'm not completely sure why he created the exploding crack other than it would be a good way to hook them and to really make them his, I guess. But obviously he wanted them to explode at some point since that.
Yeah, the hamster exploded, so it shouldn't have been a surprise the prostitutes exploded.
Well, no, and it really wasn't. I mean, what a magnificent scene that is, I might add. I love the fact that he's in the room, and I mean, we haven't even talked about Zorro the pimp yet, but like, I love the fact that he's in the room and they find the crack because he's ready to go. He is ready to be like, I cannot make a decision. I just can't do it. I'm going to leave right now, but they need their money. And then they discover the exploding crack, and for them, seeing that amount of crack is like seriously an exciting moment in their lives. That is the greatest. Yeah. That crack is like crack. I tell you
now,
it's like crack to them.
I like watching like crack documentaries, like on HBO and stuff. I'm sorry, it's a genre of documentaries. I watch it occasionally.
Like Family
View. Now, I have never seen crack users get a whole bunch of crack or any crack, and then immediately all want to have sex with each other.
Well, it's because
I mean, this could be a super crack thing, or
edit it out.
I'm just saying it doesn't strike real.
But I mean.
You're right.
Thankfully,
that's right. I think this whole movie's bullshit.
It's great though. I love it.
What? So are you suggesting, then, Jim, that there is no exploding crack in the world?
Man, no. There's regular crack that does not make you explode and does not make you want to have sex with other women. What I love about this character and the prostitute scene really highlights it is that at some point they decided to make him very prudish. Yeah. And it's just a subtle thing that comes up periodically, but they're at the big sex party with all of the crack that so far has not making people explode. That doesn't happen till later. And two women high on crack are starting to make out with each other. And he says, that's not what your body was meant to do. he's very prudish.
Yeah, it's true. He totally joins that kind of the church crowd in that moment.
I love that depth to the character. You don't see that a lot in this kind of movie.
I also like he's not completely likable. At no point in the movie, even like the
He's horrible.
That's what I'm saying. Even before his fiance gets run over by a lawnmower, you're going, this guy is off. Like, seriously off. I am not inviting this guy over on Saturday night.
Ignoring his family so he can poke a living brain with a giant eyeball. Yeah, something's off.
I mean, that's the obvious signs, but personality, I'm saying, I mean, you would, if he came into a job interview, you wouldn't give it to him.
Well, that's fair.
Yes, absolutely right. Absolutely right. Can't argue with that.
He seems to wear his work uniform around the house a lot.
He wore the same, yeah. Other than he had one change of clothes. He had his
the hookers. So he's got a lovely suit on.
But otherwise, yes, totally in his work outfit, which I did appreciate because of course it had that great lightning bolt on it. So it was definitely a nice looking pair of coveralls. Unlike the pimp Zorro, who was a big muscle bound guy who always wore the muscle shirt and stuff, it was one of those characters that, I mean, I get why he's there in that regard because he's got to find the crack, he's got to have the pimp, but yeah, you probably could have cut Zorro right out of the movie without really missing anything.
But I mean, Zorro's death was magnificent.
Yes. That whole, all the spare parts being reanimated after Frank and Hooker and stuff like that. I mean,
which seemed to have reattached themselves to each other at random.
Oh yeah, totally. Well,
that was weird
because it was all stuck in his estrogen bath, patent pending, but so apparently it. Like with all the electricity and stuff that managed to bring it all together. And you could see that coming, but the fact that they gave it to you is great. And then I liked the ending. I thought that the ending was a nice little twist. It kind of sold the movie for what it was.
I thought the most interesting choice was to have Frank and Hooker speak in nothing but lines that the prostitutes had said earlier in the movie. I thought her performance was spectacular with like the little weird mouth grimaces and stuff.
Some of those mouth movements were absolutely insane.
So Frank and Hooker, you'll have to look up a picture of her. Like if you're listening to this, if you have not seen the film, look up a picture because she's amazing looking. She's got scars everywhere. Her limbs are different colors than each other. Her face and her hands are different colors than the rest of her body. She has no problem finding a John within seconds of hitting the street. This guy looks like he's won the lotto.
Well, he's ecstatic. After you've looked her up, look up the Patty Cullen who played her. Look up her penthouse pictures because she was penthouse pet of the year.
Oh, you pervert, man.
You're talking about legitimate art
and you go straight to pornography.
Only saying this because research purposes, so you can see how she compares. The fact that she's naked and the penthouse pet of the year is not the part I'm suggesting. I want you to compare and contrast the wonderful makeup job.
Now, does she have purple nipples in real life, or is that something just for the film?
I don't know. I had something purple.
Well, so are you suggesting then, Jack, that you, like most of the people in this, have a fetish for women that are stitched together?
I guess Scar shows character.
Because there really was a whole lot of like, whoa, this chick is hot.
I was so turned on when I read to the movie Scarface, and then turned out nothing like what I was hoping.
Awesome.
What a tease.
All right. Well, why don't we jump into the scoring on this bad boy?
Oh, sorry, I was distracted. I had searched Patty Mullen in Penthouse. Yeah,
you're welcome.
That's a rabbit hole right there. That's what she said. All right, so we're in our search for the ultimate B movie. We rate every film in five categories, none of which are objective quality. The first category we have is called schlock appeal, and we start with Stan.
Well, there is a heavy duty amount of schlock in this movie. There is no question about it. I think for me, and it's funny because I'm going to pull out something that Nick pulled out when we were talking about.
It's not something Jack pulled out.
I don't want to know what Jack pulled out. But,
I never put it away either.
But when we were talking about Ninja 3, The Domination, especially when it came to the what the fucks, and I think it's probably the same thing, but for schlock appeal, I almost feel like Frankenhooker isn't quite as schlocky as it maybe could have been, because the universe establishes it in the movie as so hyper schlocky that I can't give it any more than an 8, just because it's so insanely schlocky that I feel like it's set up and it established that right away.
God damn you, using my own logic against me. Yeah, you convinced me. I'm knocking it down 1.9. The movie's called Frankenhooker. Come on.
Well, that's crazy concept. This is schlock appeal. I mean, it's definitely got some. Like, it's. I'm not nearly as high on that as you guys. I'm only giving it a 6, because it's
both
like
Frankenstein and Hooker.
Yeah, well, and again, that's crazy concept. But like, it's one of those movies that wants to be schlocky. Like, it's, and so, and it perfectly succeeds. But it's not a movie like Frankenstein's Island or Ninja 3 The Domination or one of these, which has no idea it's making something schlocky, you know, and which is what makes it so wonderful. So it's like it wants to be schlocky, but it also doesn't reach the level of another movie that wants to be schlocky, like, you know, The Toxic Avenger either. Like, so I think a 6 is about fair.
All right, I'm also going to give it a more fair score, 10. This movie, the first shot of this movie is an eyeball that is staring out from inside of a brain. And the last shot is a guy on a giant reanimated woman's corpse. 10 out of 10 for schlock on this one. Our next category we call More Heart Than Budget.
Whoa, now this one, it doesn't have much budget, but I'll totally suggest that it has no heart, because it absolutely knows exactly what it was intended to do, and it does it. So I'm just going to go with a 2 here.
Wow.
I have no idea what you're thinking.
Did not see that coming.
I did not. No, no, I'm in shock here. No, this is a movie that would not exist unless the director writer really wanted to make it. Nobody was crying out.
It took him 12 years to hammer home your point. It took him 12 years to make this movie.
I mean, I can't even fathom where you're coming. 10.
Yeah, no, this is like, it took him 12 years to make this movie. They managed to get a ton of special effects out of what they were doing. You know, I mean, yeah, 10.
Well, we've voted 2-1 against Stan here as far as the scoring, and I hate to pile on, but also 10.
Come on.
This is like, it's like Taxi Driver with exploding hookers. I love it. All right, now here's
it's got a sweetness to it too, somehow, despite everything.
This may make up some points. This may slide it back a bit. We call the next category "What the Fuck" moments.
Well, I did make some notes, so I'll only read the first three pages. like off the top, there was a moment where he's in his house and he's shifting the pictures that are all on an odd angle, and he shifts one of the pictures to be on, of course, an odd angle. So I just found that a little funny. Kissing the photo of his girlfriend, which was creepy, but sets the character up nicely. I love the fact that there is a giant fake looking spark plug as one of the props. It is a beautiful piece. Now the drill bits that he uses on his head, most of us keep those in, you know, a case or a, you know, like some sort of you know, good place to keep them. He keeps them in his bowling ball bag with the bowling ball. Yes. I love the fact that he has the largest hydraulic lift in the world that manages. I can't imagine how far down underground that hydraulic lift must go to get as high as it managed to go. But finally, and I'm not sure exactly which part I got it from, but the hooker stands for "Hold On to Our Knowledge of Equal Rights," which I thought was fantastic. So in this case, based on my notes, I am going to give it an 8.
You are really out there. Because, I mean, this is a movie with a pile of dismembered breasts on the table where he has to sort them. And you pick out the hydraulic lift and the fact that the pictures aren't straight as the WTF in this film.
Well, because the rest, I know that everybody is going to take care of business when it comes to the breasts and stuff like that. I might as well take care of the minutiae, that the small little things that other people might not mention that I feel like deserve to get a little bit of credit as well.
I'm gonna appeal to. Oh, go ahead. You're not done.
Yeah, I was just 10. I mean, everything in this movie is just. I can't believe it's there. I love. Yeah, a lot of WTF.
I'm gonna just go back and see if I can appeal to. I'm gonna give a little story to Stan. I want to go back and see if I can appeal to him to score higher than 2. So Bill Murray gave this film, said if there's only one film you see this year, it should be Frankenhooker, because he was shooting Quick Change and he was directing that at the same time, and he was editing it and everything like that. And so he was editing it at the same place as they were editing this, and he was interested in the movie. And he told him about the movie. He was very interested. So the production company and the distributor called him to get a quote about the movie. And the director said, he wouldn't give out his information. Like he blocked it, essentially. He thought Bill Murray was such a nice guy, he didn't want to take advantage of him and get him to give a quote for the movie, until finally he ran into Bill Murray, and Bill Murray's like, "No, dude, why didn't you contact me? I wanted to give a recommendation." And so that's how it ended up happening. But like, if that isn't more heart than budget, that they had a chance for a huge celebrity endorsement and didn't want to do it. Can you score higher than
The peer pressure's a little rough here, Adstein.
All right, I'll tell you what, I will bump it up. I'll give it a 4.
Do we allow that? I thought he locked it in.
He had that.
Who wants to be the millionaire? Like we can go back and we can do whatever we want.
No.
If you want to change scores from other movies we've done this season, that's awesome. I don't care.
Okay. What the hell are we rating? What are we doing?
WTF.
Okay. So the inside of the garage is exactly 4 times bigger than the outside of the garage. Exactly 4 times bigger. Because that's what was written in the script. And that's the problem with this movie right there, is that there's nothing that's a WTF. Everything's a memorable moment. Nothing. WTFs are those moments that you can't believe are happening because you can't believe that their incompetence made them do this, and that's what makes it so great.
Leave it to Jack to bring in math.
Not movies that not decisions that are purposeful. So when you make it 4 times as big as the inside, outside as the inside, that's a WTF, except for the fact that it's so on purpose that it's not. So it's a 4.
So there's a scene in this movie where
at least one,
he has a room full of hookers who are having a sex party that he is not taking part in. They are apparently doing it gratis. As a demonstration of their prowess before he chooses one. This is the weirdest deal ever made with a pimp, that he's going to watch the pimp's whole slate of women. And then they take the super crack that makes them explode. And he fits all of their body parts into a couple of trash bags. So this is a 10. This movie is just insanity every minute of it. The next is memorable moments. Stan.
Well, you know, I mean, exploding hookers. I'll really never forget exploding hookers. There's no question about that. I do feel like Frankenhooker, but just by itself, actually, I think just the cover alone. I do remember seeing that in the like video rental places and stuff like that, and I was thinking, man, that looks weird. I'll bet you that is a crazy movie. Never getting it, just because I'm not sure I was ever not scared of watching Frankenhooker, but I think just for that alone, I will give it an 8.
My mom let me rent this film. I'm just thinking back, and I was trying to make the argument, not really realizing what a hooker was at the time. Yeah.
Did you say she would or would not let you rent?
Would not.
Would not.
Wouldn't.
Oh, I was gonna give your mom an 8 out of 10 on this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. God, what are we rating again? Sorry.
Memorable moments.
Memorable moments.
I only there say is, that because I just tried to remember what we were rating.
So that apparently is somewhat of a memorable moment.
Yeah.
I missed your score there.
There is nothing about this movie that is easily forgettable. Yeah, I'm going with a 9.
Yeah, I also got a 9. This movie's loaded with memorable moments, memorable decisions and moments and just characters and scenes and special effects and just loaded with it. So 9 is solid.
All right, I gave all my points to What the Fuck, so 6 is what I have for this. I think it's really the performance of James Lorenz is what I take away from this. He just carried this film really well. Like, so much of it is about him, and him being believable and likable as a character. All right, our last category.
He should have had some more after this than he did. Career-wise.
Yeah, like, I mean, he's still a working actor, but he's playing, like, you know, Technician 5 in, like, you know, the latest spy movie or something. Like, he's definitely did have potential that I don't think was captured in later work. Final category is called Crazy Concept.
Well, you know, I mean, I know you guys told me that this was crazy and stuff like that, but really, I just didn't see it. I mean, I'll have to give it a 1. I'm just kidding. I'm fucking with you. That's a 10. it's fucking crazy.
Yeah, 10. I can't. I would love to say I'm tired of giving out points. But
you've watched this like literally right before we recorded, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah,
that I'm sure has put it on your mind.
Nick, how many times have you watched Frankenhooker is actually the better question?
Actually, this is the first time.
Really?
That's
amazing.
It's been on the list, but you know, you get those. It was on the VHS. I could never find it in like a for sale bin. The DVD is rare and expensive and came out from Blue Underground, which is kind of hard to get. I'm a huge fan of the director's other work, Basket Case, but I could never get my hands on Frankenhooker before.
Oh, I didn't realize he did a Basket Case. That's another.
He did all three Basket Case and Brain Damage, a movie called Brain Damage.
I believe he also did Maniac Cop.
Nope.
Okay. Maybe produced Maniac.
At least I don't think he did. Like, I could be wrong. I think I'll have to look it up now, but I don't think he did.
I believe he did Grease 2.
Wow.
No, that's also not true. just throw out random movies.
That's too bad.
Jack, films. Crazy concept.
Here we go. Basket Case, Brain Damage, Basket Case 2, Frankenhooker, Basket Case 3, Bad Biology, documentary on Herschel Gordon Lewis, the godfather of gore, another documentary on that sexploitation, Chasing Banksy, and another documentary last year called The Trial of Mike Diana. So he went into kind of more serious filmmaking, some on the whatever, but no Maniac Cop.
Well, that's because it's pretty obvious between 1991 and 2008 he doesn't have a movie, so I think that that if he wanted to work again, he's got to figure something else out.
So I'm going to, well, he's a film historian as well, like he's a professor, amazingly.
Man, I want that guy.
This
as a
is the guy who had a scene. He had a scene of a magnifying glass on a woman's nipple for like 30 seconds. If we could have seen this in a movie theater and seen that, like, we would have lost our minds at the age that this is out.
I'll tell you this right now. If I had seen this in the movie theater, it would have been tens across the board.
Oh yeah. I'm going to give this, I'm going to just read a little something for you. According to him, what was his name? The director there, Frank Hennenlotter. He tells a little story about the film's release. Frankenhooker's initial release was delayed because of difficulty obtaining an R rating from the MPAA. The director recalls that one representative of the ratings body actually said in a phone call to the production company's secretary, "Congratulations, you're the first film rated S." And she said, "S for sex?" And they said, "No, S for shit." 10. 10. Crazy concept, S for shit. 10.
As I said earlier, this is like an improv bit where you like pull two random words and try to make a story out of it. I mean, Frankenstein and hookers. Throw that at a 24-hour storytelling group and like come back with a tale from that from these random words I just like literally picked randomly out of the dictionary. This is a 10. I just the purple nipples. Like, did we spend enough time talking about purple nipples in this episode? Never.
Really, I don't know that we spent enough time talking about him drilling into his head hit certain.
He was giving himself self lobotomies to.
There's a term for it. I think it's trepanation or trephination. It's the the putting holes in your head to or usually in someone else's. Let's be fair. Sometimes they were willing and sometimes not to release evil spirits. Very traditional way traditional doctoring. I'm also giving this a 10. So 10's across the board for crazy concept in this one.
And there's so much we didn't talk about. We didn't even talk about the bar where there was so much going on. I mean, we had
hookers and the different things. Yeah.
Well, we had the muscle builder in the French maid outfit that is never really addressed.
No, it's just no reason. No reason. Why not? Why not?
Because that says New York.
Yeah, it is one of those movies that has a has a character who's gay, just because in the 80s having somebody gay say something was funny. like so he's like dressed like a French maid outfit or whatever. Yeah, and it's just, you know.
I never thought he was gay. I just thought he was
dude, you what? Was isn't
there
his,
was a lot his, to unpack there.
Isn't his quote? Isn't his quote? Oh my. Something like that? Like
I think there truly is so much insanity in this movie, and I think maybe for me where I lost it was that it was almost just too much insanity again. It just went so far, and there's just they threw everything in that perhaps I need to watch it two or three times so that I truly can digest all of the craziness before I can, before I can actually accept this as like perhaps tens across the board, like it maybe could be.
All right. So as always, we have six secret modifiers every season. This film falls into two of them. It does get a plus one for having a vicious death within 10% of the beginning of the film. Our heroine is chopped up into tiny, tiny pieces by a lawnmower, and it's hilarious. It does get a minus one, however, for the monster cop-out, taking a full 56 minutes to get to Frankenhooker out of an 85-minute movie, bringing us to a grand total of 85.5, which does put it as the second highest-rated film on Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo so far.
Wow. Wow, that is interesting. I didn't
know. What is the score?
85.5.
Wow, I'm surprised. With it getting a 4 from me in a category and a 4 from Stan in a category.
There's a lot of tens in this movie.
A 6 for you in another category and another like 6 for me. Like, I'm really surprised.
Well, what are our top 3 now?
I mean, let's keep in mind there were 10 10 out of 10s out of the, like.
Wow, maybe I should have given one of those a 9. I don't feel like it should outscore Ninja 3 The Domination.
It doesn't. It comes in second behind Ninja 3
The Domination. Okay, good. Okay, I missed that part. Okay.
Ninja 3 The Domination, 87.5. This one, 85.5.
Okay.
It does put it in second place, though.
All right. And Raw Force is right below there, isn't it?
Raw Force is at an 80, and Frankenstein Island is at 83, and Wolf Guy's at 83.5. So we're,
And it's funny, if I was to score them, I would say, like, most Boogaloo, if you just said most Boogaloo of the season, I'd go Frankenstein Island first.
And it was Wolf close. Guy, I mean, Frankenstein Island.
And Wolf Guy 2 and this 3.
Yeah, I would agree with that completely,
We are very, I mean, these are very close on scores, though. There's only 2.5 points separating those three films.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Interesting.
So overall, like, that really high scoring season this year.
Well, there's,
I say this year, this season.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, there's been an insane amount of Boogaloo when you kind of go back and when you are thinking that, I mean, yeah, Monster Squad is like the most normal movie we've got, but and I mean that's by a long shot. But I mean, afterwards, when you jump up, it's like, what's the next most normal? Oh, it's Dracula AD 1972. So I mean, you know, like, and that's a, though not scoring wise, but that's still a good jump from Monster Squad in when it comes to Boogaloo. But then when you talk about like Wolf Guy and you talk about Frankenstein Island and Frankenstein Conquers the World and finally Frankenhooker and then of course the couple of lost episodes, Tale of the Mummy in there. I mean, there's some fucking Boogaloo in this season, I tell you. and also we're all like, unlike season 2, when we talked about nerds, jocks, and preppies, which, you know, we definitely dug in, but all of the movies had their consistent elements. I mean, in this case, there's really not that many consistent elements other than the fact that you've got Universal Monsters.
We didn't have a lot of moments this season where we were going, oh, yeah, this trope again.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think we're going to have a lot of that next season, too. I think it's going to be a lot of very diverse moments,
and I like that. I really enjoy the fact that you never know what you're going to get, and And ultimately, you know, what a great way to wrap it up with Frankenhooker, because, you know, it's, you can try to explain to somebody what they're going to get, but until they've watched it, they don't truly understand what they're going to get.
After they've watched it, they still
don't truly understand. No, I mean, if you're gonna watch some movies, you know, sit down. Man, can you imagine trying to watch Wolf Guy, Frankenstein Island, and Frankenhooker all in one night? I think your head would explode. But let's do it!
Yes, I can immediately.
All right. Well, before we move on, let's tell the folks where they can find us on the internet.
All right. Best place for us is on Instagram, Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. You can also follow our podcast sponsors on everything else. WeTalkPodcasts.com.
Ah, fuck those guys.
We Talk Podcasts on Facebook and We Talk Podcasts on Twitter. And they're great guys. They're great guys.
Oh, okay. Well, at least one of them isn't.
Well, I don't know which one you mean, but
I don't know either. So
I don't actually listen to any other podcasts.
Like, I mean, they all sound like the same guy.
it's like, is it two guys or four guys or six guys? I don't know.
It's a lot of guys, that's for sure.
It hardly matters. All right. Well, we have come to a close of Season 3 Monster Chiller Horror Theater of the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo, and we are moving on.
Do we have a name for the next season, though?
No, we do not. So we are moving on, though, to our holiday season, which is currently Season 4 Holiday Season. I know it's a great name so far, but by the time we come back with our first movie, we will have a much better name for
you. Let's call it Season's Weepings.
Season's Weepings. Oh, well, actually, given some of the movies on there, weeping might not be out of the question.
Exactly.
I feel like we're going to have a really strong start because we got Hebrew Hammer starting us off. So I'm looking forward to that. That'll start off our holiday movie extravaganza, potentially titled Season's Weepings. All right. So I'm looking forward to that, and I know everybody else is as well. Does anybody else have any last words about our wonderful Season 3 Halloween experience?
Ow! Ow, 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 ow.
Well, I couldn't put it any better myself. All right, so...
No, you can. That's the whole point. You put it much better.
All right. Oh! For Jim, for Jack, for Nick, I am 8th Dan Stanadu. This has been Season 3 Monster Chiller Horror Theater. Thanks for listening to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.